Welcome to another episode of The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes, the storytelling show that features The Clearing, where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to be told, and where all my guests have two things in common. They're all creative individuals and all with an interesting story to tell. There are some lovely storytelling metaphors, a clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1, some alchemy, some gold, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So yes, welcome to The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we shall begin. Oh, yes, indeedy doody. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Good Listening To Show, the story behind your story show. And I'm absolutely thrilled and delighted. We've got the musical future, the future of music and musical royalty and a legend in his own lunchtime here. Mr. Tom Seals is in The Good Listening To Clearing.
Hello, everybody. Well, what an intro. Thank you. I'm glad you read out the intro I wrote for myself. So thanks for that.
That's very good. You are a boogie-woogie sensation. And I know that you're an all-round talented pants. I was lucky enough to be introduced to your wonderful agent, Juliet Matthews, recently, because we've got a location in France in common. You're going to be performing, apparently, where I do my Instant Wit Laughter Lab workshops once a year, which is at Le Cir Anglais in France. And I think you're going to be doing a gig there in August, if I'm not much mistaken.
I am. I'm going out to do a sort of blues and boogie-woogie weekender where people can join me. And I'll do, obviously, a gig. And also people can... and pick my brains and we can talk blues and boogie all weekend. So yeah, it's going to be fun.
And just a couple of months before that, I'm just sort of laying out the stall nicely for you. I'll be in the same space, which has the most delicious acoustics, by the way. Katie Elliott Armitage at lecirenglais.com has this venue called L'Espace, which is a brilliant workshop venue, but also the acoustics are to die for. So, you know, you're going to really, really enjoy it.
I'm going to set you a challenge, Chris. I'd like you to leave me something there.
Yes.
Okay.
Something pleasant, I'm assuming.
Yes, please. A nice thing. I want you to leave me something and then I can have a clue at where it is and then I will report back.
Thank you so much. So I like the fact that you're already building a very warm relationship here. I like that. So what I loved about you when I first started researching you is you've laid out there from the get-go that your all-time hero, who I know you work alongside, is Jules Holland. Mm. Why I related to that is I've always said that my comic hero is Stan Laurel. Obviously, I can't sort of meet with him anymore. And Michael Palin is my comic hero, who someday I'd like to interview as well. But I love the fact that you're not only, you stated Jules Holland, who said about you, you've got a fantastic feel, a fantastic voice, the wonderful Tom Seals. I can actually hear him introducing you in that way on the old Hootenanny. Have you played at that as well, by the way?
I've not done the Hootenanny, no, but every year I'm involved with a show called the Jules Holland Boogie Woogie and Blues Spectacular, and it's a dueling piano show. There's two pianos, sort of 4, 5, 6 piano players it tends to be, and Jules bills it as his favourite piano players from around the world. So to even be mentioned in that sentence is quite ridiculous. And I get to sit next to my hero. The first time I came off stage with him, about 5 years ago, my mum handed me a piece of paper. And I was so sort of like, what, like so confused. I was, what is this? And she said, just open it. And it was a folded up piece of paper, A4, folded up 3 or 4 times. So it was quite small in a cellophane packet that had clearly been, the cellophane packet looked really old. And you know, I opened it out and it said, my name is Tom. I am 10 years old. And this is my autobiography. When I'm older, my dream is to play the piano with Jules Holland. And she said, I kept it because I knew that you would do it. And I'm so proud of that because it always has been my dream. And we'll get onto why I like that style of music a bit later because it's one of the things I want to talk about. But, you know, for me to have Jules so held up on a pedestal to now get the call to work with him maybe 7 or 8 times a year is, real dream come true.
I just adore that. Thank you so much. And also, you're a man after my own heart because you've got going on your new creative endeavour, which is pulling you towards your future during lockdown. I know you did the Tom Seals Live in Isolation show during the pandemic, and it all got going because you're in lockdown. I also loved reading the fact that, you know, we've all got one, but you had a horn section in your back garden. Most of us have a herbaceous border, but I quite like the fact that you managed to also, you know, be socially distanced, but have an extraordinary orchestra. Also, just to blur another bit of smoke at you, when I was researching it, I love the fact that you could do a really smooth introduction, you could walk, talk, and be very coherent, not do what Gerald Ford, the ex-president, was famous for. He popped some gum in his mouth and then fell up the steps of the White House. And then you sat down at the keyboard and then did this most extraordinarily fluent beginning as well. So you're coordinated and everything.
Well, I'll take that. Thanks.
So I'm going to take you through, and then, by the way, this is so lovely, there's going to be lots to talk about. I'm going to take you through the lovely storytelling metaphors of the Good Listening To show. There's a clearing, a tree, we're going to shake your tree, see which storytelling apples fall out. Then there's some alchemy, some gold, a random couple of squirrels, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. And also, I'm really glad I've got you just before you sort of take off, because you're about to go and represent the nation, please, at the Expo in Dubai.
I got a very nice letter from the Department of International Trade that said I'd been called up to, and I quote, represent the nation. And I believe it's a bit like jury service. You can't say no. If you get called up, if you get called up and you're told, you know, you're being asked to represent the nation, I don't think you can say no. Not that you would anyway. But it was, again, crazy how these things happen. I've had a song in my set for years, a song that I sang with Gregory Porter, the incredible Gregory Porter, called Hey Laura. Now, there's a gig about 5 or 6 years ago at Cheltenham Jazz Festival, and I tried to buy tickets for the show. It was called Gregory Porter and Friends. I couldn't get tickets, but I actually then, closer to the time, got asked to be one of his friends on the show. So they said, which of these songs do you want to sing? So I picked Hey Laura, which we'll get to, but it comes full circle with my girlfriend Laura. So I sang Hey Laura, and it's been in my set for maybe 5 or 6 years. One night I said, is there anyone in called Laura? And this bloke put his hand up and he said, yeah, my wife's called Laura. Okay, fine. So we got chatting and I dedicated the song to her and yada yada yada. Turned out this was Laura Faulkner, High Commissioner of the da 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 da, with this very grim title, who then said to me, I'm putting together the program of the best entertainment, culture, food, sport, everything that our country has to offer, and you're in that category. I want you to come out to Dubai and represent the nation. So yeah, it's nice, and I can't wait. So I've got my factor 50 ready, and I can't wait.
Wow. And again, there's a lovely quote, by the way, which is, what's meant for you won't pass you by. I love the fact how you're being really present to many windows of opportunity and doors that are opening for you, which is fantastic. And by the way, I so enjoyed your cellophane wrapped up biography that you wrote at the age of 10. Got to just let that hang there, because that's such an extraordinarily beautiful story.
We should have finished with it, Chris. It's all downhill from here.
Well, rule of three, maybe we'll put it back in at the end, because it's beautiful. Okay, so let's get you on the open road. And this is going to be all about you going wherever you like as you interpret these storytelling structures. So first of all, your clearing, Tom Seals, is a serious happy place of your choice. So with everything that's going on in your wonderful story and musicscape, where does Tom Seals go to get clutter-free, inspirational and able to think?
I was thinking about this, and there's an ultimate place, but I think there's two places that lead to it when the third place isn't always available. Now, the first place, if I need to work, if I'm on, right, Tom, you need to go and sort this out today, I can't sit at home and do that. And as ridiculous as it sounds, I go to a coffee shop, because in there I can headphone in, laptop on. And because you're at a place, because being self-employed, being a musician, you don't have a quote unquote an office. There's no place to go to work. So you have to be self-motivated, self-driven, all these things, which, of course, we are, but sometimes you need that place of focus. And I just find going to a coffee shop can make me do work. When it comes to more sort of time for Tom, the person, not Tom Seals, the musician, going for a drive sorts me out. I can think. I like switching off, going for a drive, listening to podcasts, not even listening to anything sometimes, just driving makes me focus a lot. But the one place really where I feel that complete sort of relaxation has been a place that not everyone may have had the opportunity to do, but with my job, I've been quite fortunate to do quite a lot over the last few years. One of my income streams, one of my work, you know, my angles of work, is I do a lot of guest entertaining roles on 6 or 7 star American cruise ships.
Wow.
So I fly in and do 1 or 2 nights in the theatre and then I fly out. So I might be on board for 3, 4, 5, 6 days, sometimes one night. So you fly to somewhere in the world, go on, do the show, fly home.
And I'm assuming you helicopter in, literally, do you, if you're trying to catch up?
Yeah, no, not always. Sometimes they fly you in and get you on a little tender boat, and you have to go out and meet the ship. Exactly. And I find that there's many reasons I'll come to where we're actually talking about, but the one thing I want to say about that is entertaining on ships has such a bad reputation. And actually, what's happening now is there's a real change that most West End performers, most Broadway performers, most people that play Ronnie Scott's and these things, they're all going onto ships to entertain, because everyone's now realizing what a good gig it is. It's fun. You get to see the world. You get paid well. And you've got these captive audiences of, maybe not on the small American lines, but you've got these captive audiences in beautiful theatres of 1,000 people. But the one place where I am at ease, mainly because your phone won't work, because the internet is so terrible in the middle of the ocean, so you're not distracted, there's no nothing, is at sea, just peaceful, calm, sunset, sunrise, that you know, that beautiful time in the day where nothing matters, because you can't affect it, because you're off thousands of miles off the coast of wherever, so you can't do anything. Something goes wrong, well, what can I do about that?
You know, I love that, being cut adrift, sort of, but also totally at peace. That's so lovely.
Yeah, it's a literal and physical thing, because you are literally in the middle of the ocean, and also physically, you know, because, and then you can't change anything that's gone wrong. At the end of the day, if something's happened at home and I need to get home, well, I'm sorry, I'm in the middle of the ocean. It's going to take me 2 days to get home. So you can't do anything about that. So I like that real peacefulness of being at sea. Most of the time, you know, they give me a nice balcony, so I get to sit on the balcony, and it's just the most peaceful place I've ever been.
And do you often get joined by Laura on these events, or is it something you just go off and do on your own?
Pre-COVID, maybe sort of 2 years before COVID, I was doing quite a lot of them, and I was on my own, and I found myself needing to say to someone, look at that, otherwise what does it mean? You know what, I remember being off the coast of, I went to Ushuaia, the southernmost city in the world, on the tip of where the Antarctic meets Argentina, and I remember my mum ringing me. I think that year I'd done about 125 flights. I mean, it was quite ridiculous. My mum rang me, she said, where are you going this week? And I said, I'm going to Ushuaia again. And I was really pulling my face about it. And I was like, oh, I've got a 16-hour flight here. And my mum was like, Tom, realize what you're saying. You know, some people will never get to go to the Antarctic. And you've been 3 times in 3 months and you're moaning at that. And that was a real sort of realization that I was in the wrong headspace for the job that I was doing at the time.
And if I may I say, what an awesome human being your mum is, because she gave you the biography, your autobiography, and she's just given you a bit of a maternal kick up the pants about perspective. I love that.
Mum always tells me, yes, she blows smoke when it's necessary. She tells me when things need to change, when necessary. And that's what's great about that relationship. So I went to Ushuaia. My body clock was all over the place because I think I'd been somewhere else the week before, and it was all a bit crazy. It was sort of 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning. I couldn't sleep. So I got up. I was on my own on a 6-star luxury cruise ship. You know, most people could never afford a dream to go on this ship. It was £10,000 a night. So, you know, it was crazy. And I'm sat on the top of the ship watching the sunrise off the coast of the Antarctic. And there was all these whales appeared. One of the most incredible things anyone could ever want to witness. But I just sat and cried. I was so unhappy. I was there. I was on my own. I had no one to share it with. And I just felt, why am I here? I don't want to be here. Yes, that's the most incredible thing anyone could ever see. But it's not incredible because you've got no one to share this experience with. So that's when things sort of changed. I said, right, come on, you're coming with me. So.
By the way, what's so lovely there is that's absolutely the energetic difference, I think, between an introvert and an extrovert. And I totally relate to you how an extrovert needs someone with them to go, look at that. Whereas my wife's an introvert. She could just go, and then wander off. I'd have to gallop after going, did you see those whales? They were. So I relate to that really profoundly because I'm like you. Obviously, I'm strangely available to join you next time should you want me to look at others with you. Also, I also enjoy the fact that your mother, using the nautical analogy that's going to keep on giving here, she occasionally nudges you to change tack in the direction of your sails to give you perspective.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Definitely. But she does all right. She gets to come with me now and again. So, you know.
Yes. And Laura obviously does the same too. That's good. Yes, so of your indeed. Three clearings, by the way, the obvious one is to be at sea, cut adrift, but totally at peace. And I'm glad that you're finding more peace with the perspective of how lucky am I. That's so lovely. It's a reframing of that experience in your life, which is lovely. So it's more exciting than the coffee shop and the driving, if I may say.
Yeah,
but let's go there. So on your balcony on the 5-6-7 star ship, if you don't mind now, I'm going to arrive with a tree.
Okay,
and you shake your tree to see which storytelling apples fall out. And this is where you've been kind enough before we spoke. And by the way, I really enjoyed our connection in that I only got to know about you 2 days ago and you said yes straight away. Because I do a lot of comedy improvisation, yes and is just a really good mindset. Say yes more, and cool things happen. So,
well, something always leads to something. That's the thing. And it's great. I'm glad. I'm delighted to be here.
So this is where you've been kind enough to have interpreted the exercise 5-4-3-2-1. So you've had 5 minutes or the 2 days since I first connected with you to think about four things that have shaped you. And if there's any resonance with what you've been saying already, that's fine. Three things that inspire you. That could be people, places, things, whatever, open to interpretation. Two things that never fail to grab your attention. And if you enjoy the film Up, as I do, that's the squirrels moment. You know, whatever's going on in your life, what never fails to distract you. And then a quirky or unusual fact about you, Tom Seals, that we couldn't possibly know until you tell us. So let's get into the foliage of your tree, shake it. How do you like these storytelling apples? Over to you.
Okay, so the four things that have shaped who I am. So you said, like you said, you asked me to spend 5 minutes thinking about this. So I said, we were having dinner last night and I said to Laura, right, I've got this podcast tomorrow. Four things that have shaped me. I said, I'd already wrote them down, so I knew what I was going to say. But I said to Laura, okay, tell me, bearing in mind, I've known Laura for 13 years. We were in a thing called the South Cheshire Young Musicians together.
The
The South Cheshire Young Musicians was a sort of shout out to them. They bought me my first gig piano. It was an organization that was a charitable thing that helped young musicians in the area. Laura was part of that as well. And I remember trying to get her to give me a cheeky snog in the bridal suite at a gig 13 years ago, and she was having none of it. But then she moved to Dubai. She went out for 5 years to Dubai as director of expressive arts at Dubai British School out there.
Wow.
And I got booked to play the Dubai Opera House. And I went out there and I just split up with the girl I'd been with for a few years. So I thought, I'll invite Laura and her boyfriend to the show.
Smooth operator. I like you.
Thank you. So I texted her and said, Laura, there's two tickets on the guest list for you and your boyfriend. Would love to see you there. She wrote back and said, I'd love to be there too. It'll just be a ticket for one. So, of course, I replied, oh, I'm terribly sorry to hear this, whilst a big grin on my face. Anyway, long story short, I asked her how long she was going to stay in Dubai for. She said, forever. I've just bought a dog. I've just bought a car. I've just bought a house. Anyway, 2 weeks later, she handed a notice in and she moved back and we just moved in together. Anyway, that's all bad. By the point is she's known me forever. She's seen my progression in terms of everything, relationships, career. You know, she knows me very well. So I thought she'd say something quite profound when I said, Laura, four things that have shaped me. And it turns out she's actually funnier than me or you, Chris. The first thing, without any hesitation, Laura, what's the one thing that she's shaped me? And she said, chocolate orange.
I love that. By the way, yep. In researching, you're so deliciously self-effacing because you talk about having been the victim of being, this is of your own volition. You say, I've been the victim of a bit of, you know, bullying, metaphorically, of being ginger, wearing glasses and carrying more weight than your frame might otherwise wish.
Yeah, thanks to Jeff Prestridge from the Mail on Sunday for that quote. It's very true. It's very true. I feel the need. It's quite funny. I feel the need to come out and reference the fact that in my head, I think all people think is, oh, he's fat and ginger and plays the glasses and he looks like Elton John. And, you know, I feel that I need to reference that. So we did a show with the comedian Joe Brand, and we'll come back to this, but this is the new show that I'm doing at the moment, where I'm chatting to celebrities about their favorite songs and me and my band play them, which is a beautiful concept. The show works well. It's funny, it's sad, because we can take the guest to places through the music that they probably wouldn't get to on stage otherwise. And I did a show with Joe Brand a few weeks ago, and Joe is sort of famous for coming out and making what she just calls fat jokes, because she feels that she needs to address her weight. And so do I. So we resonated quite a lot about that. And we were talking about it on stage and I was kind of opening up. But what I found really interesting is that quite a few people said to me, I didn't enjoy that part of the show.
Ah, yes.
You know, we really enjoyed your show, but we didn't like that because you were too self-deprecating. You were too this, you were too that. But that's how I feel.
Yeah, yeah. And I know that for Jo Brand, that's her shtick, a bit like Jack D would be morose as his shtick. I know he's not truly morose, but everyone has their shtick and their cut and thrust. So, but that's very interesting. How did you respond to that audience feedback?
In the same way where I said, well, that's how I feel. So we, no matter, you know, we can't take that away. Whether they didn't like it because they felt uncomfortable, but I'm comfortable talking about that and Joe's comfortable talking about that. So we both felt comfortable and we thought it was, you know, I'd listen back to it and maybe I go, okay, maybe there was a bit too much of it.
Yeah, yeah.
But from my point of view as a new interviewer, a new host, I'm trying to build common ground with someone to give myself confidence. So I'm trying to find common ground in me and Joe. And that was the thing actually we bonded probably most about during that show.
Yes.
So I felt within that we'd got emotion, a bit of raw stuff, things that have bothered me for 10, 15 years on stage that I've never spoke about because I've never had the platform, whereas that show allowed me to. So that was almost therapy for me on stage.
And again, very relatable, the whole catharsis. I mean, I'm loving giving people a good listening to for the same reasons, because I'm able to riff on the human condition and it's fantastic.
Exactly. But besides that, it also allowed me and Joe just to take the mickey out of each other laugh. And we're addressing serious issues that we both struggled with.
Yes.
So if someone watching it finds this uncomfortable, that's maybe because they've never been in that position.
Yes.
But me and Joe have. And that's things that we both struggle with. Therefore, we can go on stage and laugh about it. So it's quite an interesting thing. And it's, you know, I have to take people's opinions on board
and in finding,
to some extent.
In you finding your moment in the sunshine, it is a really good format. It's not surprising to me that you've really taken off with it, because you are very charming and you're very authentic and you're self-deprecating in a good way, I think. But, you know, and please tell us about the show deliberately at the end. I know it's called the Tom Seale
Show
in Isolation. Yeah. So there'll be that opportunity. So back to chocolate orange as shapeage.
Yes. Yeah, less chocolate orange and more things that have actually shaped me. So let's go back to the Jules Holland thing. The first thing I think really is my dad's dad, my granddad, had a big band. And that's the thing that ultimately has shaped the reason I love the style of music that I like. I would love my own 30-piece big band. It's kind of impractical to tour financially, physically, whatever. But my granddad having a big band is probably the reason that I play the style of music I play. But then the second thing I think, which is a real sort of influence and may have not happened, you know, my career may not have happened had this not happened. My sister, who is a science teacher, who's 9 years older than me, was having singing lessons. And when she was having these singing lessons, her singing teacher wanted her to sing scales. So my parents bought her a little keyboard, tiny little keyboard with, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 notes on. And my sister Rebecca hated playing it. So she used to make me, a little brother, just go da 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 on the piano. So I guess the combination of those two things, Beck making me do the piano and my dad's dad having the VCO, the versatile concert orchestra, led me to love this style of music.
And by the way, the fact that you're being pulled towards representing the nation now within Expo, you're actually going where, you know, if I may, where the money really, really is. So I would keep that dream alive and actually keep stating it, you know, state your truth without unwarranted doubt. And I don't doubt that you'll get a 30-piece band, of course.
Yeah, well, one day. The last tour was 12-piece, so we're slowly working away up.
You do the math. That's lovely. And as you say, exactly. You've already got a horn section in your garden, which is quite cunning as well.
I like that. We'll get onto the remote horn section. and then I think, quite interestingly, so that's kind of what I think shaped me musically. Whereas when I think about Tom as the person which, it's always hard to talk about yourself and then sort of say the positive things about yourself, I find. And that's not because my act is quite self-deprecating or it's, you know, but no one sits there and says, oh, I'm kind and I'm this and I'm that. And if we did, we'd both not like them and we probably wouldn't want to talk to them. But I know that I think at least that I'm a personable person, that if I walk into a room, I would like to shake people's hand and look them in the eye and say, it's so nice to meet you. I try and remember their name. And that's happened to me in the past. When I've worked with certain stars, I've been taken away, you know, I've been blown away the fact they've remembered my name.
Yes.
A minute later. And that makes you feel special. So I remember how that made me feel. So I try and walk into a room, speak to people, look them in the eye, shake their hands. Nice to meet you, Steve, whatever their name is. But I also think I'm funny. I like storytelling. Not that I like the center of attention, but I like telling stories. And actually, all of that is my granddad, Frank. So he's actually my mum's dad. So the weird thing about this is that my dad's dad is the musician, but we didn't ever have that relationship, any sort of relationship like that. He lived away and, you know, he's still around now, but we don't really see him. Whereas my mum's dad, Frank, who's no longer here, was my best friend and my hero, you know, and I just wanted to be him.
Lovely. Every now and again, I like to let a bit of silence hang there. That was just lovely. Where next?
So the fourth thing, really, I think shaped me is the travel. And I think that's, you know, with the ships being a source of income for me over the last few years, you know, not obviously the last few years with COVID, but pre-COVID, you constantly have to find a sort of middle ground when you're self-employed. You have to do things that you like, but you also need to make money. So if you can do things that are actually good money, but you enjoy as well, but aren't necessarily the direct path of where you want to go, then, you know, you have to do it. I always think, what's my ultimate goal? And I don't necessarily know what that is, because the goalposts shift slightly all the time. But ultimately, I want to be a professional musician. I want to make a living out of music. And in whatever capacity that means, then I think I'm happy with that.
I very, very profoundly see a keyboard, a piano, a grand at the epicenter of your clearing, obviously. So if you keep
turning
to that,
it's got to be a big balcony, you see, to have the grand piano on.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, the idea. So when the ships came along, and I got asked to go out to Las Vegas to a showcase, and they asked me to give me my best 12 minutes. That's all I got on stage, 12 minutes to impress. And the next day, I got about 60 offers of contracts on ships. Obviously, I didn't take them all, because otherwise, that's all I would have done. But the opportunity at that time in my life, when I'd never really been paid well for gigs, I'd not really traveled, I'd not really done it. And all of a sudden to have this contract on the table of going to over 100 countries and making a bit of money was like, as maybe this is what I have actually worked for 10 years. I don't know. You know, I 18, 19 years old, was doing gigs in pubs for 50 quid. And then all of a sudden it got quite serious. And so I, you know what, I thought, you know what, I'm going to do it. I'm going to take it. So in the space of 3 years, I went to over 100 countries. And that made me grow up person, you know, like as Tom, I had to, I remember getting sent to the wrong place in Japan. You know, you could get sent to the wrong place in Spain and you could probably work it out, but getting sent to 3 hours the wrong direction in Japan, where it wasn't like Tokyo where it's someone would speak English. It was proper rural. I had no idea what was going on.
By the way, what's so relatable? Sorry to interrupt you. I got sent to the wrong school in Uganda, just as a parallel universe.
Yeah.
When I was five.
So, you know, really?
Yes. It's not about me. Keep going.
Yeah, some just terrible mix-up. So, yeah, it was, you know, I've seen some incredible things and been to some of the most incredible places, all because of playing the piano, which I just find so ridiculous. But I love every second of it. But yeah, I think all of that has shaped who I am. I now feel I can hold my own in certain conversations better because of this. The ships have led me to have dinner with President Clinton's assistant, you know, and all these ridiculous.
Hey, that's only one step removed from the man himself. I like the fact you've got into the antechamber with the assistant. That's
exactly.
Good.
Well, and he plays jazz saxophone, doesn't he, old Mr. Clinton, President? Because I'm going to try and get a gig with him at one point.
I thought you had because of the Save Birdland gig. And by the way, I started dribbling on that bit of research because you've worked with Sting. And at that point, I was dribbling.
Yeah, that was a cool lineup to be on. There was the Save. So Birdland on Broadway, New York, one of the most famous jazz clubs in the world.
Yeah.
In the pandemic was having a bit of financial trouble. So they put together a fundraising concert. And I got asked to be involved. So I did my bit live streamed from Dubai Opera House.
Ah, go you.
For that show, which was, you know, it was one of the most incredible things. But yeah, that was a cool lineup. Elvis Costello, President Clinton, like you said, Sting, and one of my heroes, Billy Joel.
Oh, go you. And so does Sting know Tom Steele's Hello, Tom?
Not quite that. No, not yet. We're working on it, though.
Yeah, Fields of Gold, they're coming. It's all good. It's all good.
Exactly.
Keep going.
Yeah.
Over to you again. This is still in your foliage.
Okay, cool. So we're on. So I think those four things really, I feel, of what have shaped me. So my granddad's personality.
Frank.
All the travel. Yeah. And then obviously the music side is where that's coming from.
Also, I love the idea of you sort of trying not to smile when Laura said it'll just be a ticket for one. I love that.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, now we're into three things that inspire you.
Okay. So I think the whole thing of achieving is really what inspires me career-wise, musically. We constantly set goals, whether they're small goals or big goals. Ultimately, the small goals are leading to the big goals. So my thing is that I want to play the Royal Albert Hall. And everything I'm doing is getting me closer to that. So in terms of what's inspiring me, it's the thought of playing the Royal Albert Hall. Musically is that, yeah, that inspiration.
That's so wonderful to have a really clear outcome that you pull towards, and everything is on the path, on the trail towards that clearing where your piano then becomes center stage Royal Albert Hall.
The funny thing is that it's that thing when you get there, it'll be, well, I've done it now, so what now? Like, I've always set three goals. One of them was to play Ronnie Scott's, you know, the most famous jazz club in the world. One was to be on BBC Radio 2. And it's weird, like, why are those goals for me? I don't know. They're not financial goals. They're not, you know, they're not, I don't know what the outcome of those goals are. They're just a big metaphorical tick.
It's sort of the environment in which you get to work and ply your magic, really.
I guess so, but I guess it's also a sense of I'm good enough now, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, because you constantly doubt yourself, no matter what you do, and whether people probably admit that or not, I don't know. I'm quite open about that I always have. I've always doubted myself forever. And the very weird thing is, I thought at 18, 19, 20, that I'm not, quote unquote, jazzy enough to play Ronnie Scott's, because Ronnie Scott's is a jazz club. People go to Ronnie Scott's and expect jazz. Now, I've always thought, but you can't describe what I do because it's jazz, blues, swing, boogie-woogie, pop, soul, funk. And I say to people, if you like good music and you like incredible musicianship, you're going to enjoy my band. But it's not a style. I can't really tell you the style. So I always thought I'm not jazzy enough is what I'd always say out loud. But what I'm thinking is I'm not good enough to play Ronnie Scott's.
Yes, and of course now you have. And indeed, what you've just described is the essence of jazz anyway, because it's bits of everything. It's just, improvising based on an extraordinary canon of capability.
That's the thing. You know, all these people, all the jazz greats, are all taking influences from everything. And they're probably going even further back. They're taking salsa and all even just things that you would never imagine.
And by the way, have you heard the quote that the most creative individual is the one with the longest memory? So the idea that there's no such thing as an original idea, it's always someone referencing something else. So exactly. I find that in comedy. Obviously, you find it in music.
Well, So I had a couple of lessons over the past few years with a doctor of jazz, which imagine telling people you're a doctor, and then they say, and you say Dr. Jeff. And what Adam taught me was, you are constantly just pinching ideas from all the greats, because why not? So he'd teach me 10 classic solos and I'd learn them note for note and I'd be able to play along to the record to these solos. And it wasn't piano players, by the way. It might be Charlie Parker, the great sax player. And I would learn a Charlie Parker line that he'd just improvised. But he's learned that from someone. He's taken ideas from someone. So what I do is I then learn the Charlie Parker line. I learn this line. I learn a Miles Davis line. I learn an Oscar Peterson line. And then when I'm coming to solo as Tom, I take a little bit from there, a little bit from there, a little bit from there, add a bit of my own stuff in, which I've probably nicked from Jules Holland. And then all of a sudden people go, oh, that Tom Seals, these solos are amazing. It's like, yeah, but like you're saying, we're just pulling influences.
There's a DNA trail, even going back to your grandfather, Frank, as well. I mean, there's just a lovely DNA purposeful pulling you towards your future. This is your moment in the sunshine. This is very exciting.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip, because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, you know, for all those years, thought I'm not good enough to do this, I'm not good enough to do that. And that's because I think I was just playing the wrong venues. You know, if you do my style of music in a pub in Crewe on a Friday night, it isn't going to work.
Well, old Crewe.
Lucky old Crewe. Yeah, they didn't think that. But when you realise what you're doing is good enough, and you then take it to different places, and you meet people that have the support and the faith in you behind the scenes to push you to those next places. You obviously start to build a bit more confidence in yourself and in what you're doing. And I now, and like we said, we get onto Ronnie Scott's. It was always a dream of mine. I've played there many times now. And every time, you know, it sounds cliche, but it's true. We sell out, people queuing around the corner. It's one of the most amazing feelings to see that. Now I sit on stage at Ronnie Scott's. And 5, 6, 7 years ago, if you'd have said to me that was the case, I would have thought I'd be sat at the piano the first time I ever played there thinking, I don't deserve to be here. It's imposter syndrome. Why am I sat here? I'm just Tom from Crewe. I shouldn't be sat here. But when I was sat at the piano, it was one of the first times ever in my career that I've sat down at a piano, a sold out show where people have paid 50 quid to come and see me. And I'm going, you know what? I belong on that stage. I deserve to be here.
Yes.
And it was one of the most, it was one of the most incredible experiences, because it was, it come out of nowhere. It all of a sudden, I was like, you know what? I've worked hard to get here, so yeah, I'm going to enjoy this.
And I enjoy that there's definitely an undercurrent. I'm not just being nice to you, but there's an undercurrent of humility in there, which is just really enjoyable.
I just think it's real and it's genuine. You know, I'm not going on stage and putting an act on. I'm going out there and I'm telling people, how have I got here? Tom from Crew. Like, and now I'm playing Ronnie Scott. This is crazy. And you're all here. And this is the best thing ever.
You're just Jenny from the block. I like that.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So I think that thing of achieving inspires me. And on a similar note, the second thing that inspires me, but it's kind of quite similar, is that thing of proving people wrong. But I don't know if that's got a competitive edge in me, or it's a bit of stubbornness. I don't know. And I don't know where the negative side to admit is on that. But I want to prove people wrong. I want to say, you know what, mate? I did that and I'm proud of it. And you know, you didn't believe in me. And I'd love to turn around to those people. Polydor Records, probably shouldn't have said them. But there was a big record label years ago. I was 18, 19, and I sent them some stuff. And they come back and said, we really like the sound, but you don't look like a pop star. Go and lose 3 stone and we'll talk to you.
Oh, yeah. So don't when they ring you up again, don't take them on. Or maybe you should. I don't know. Also, you're in good company. I saw Sir David Attenborough had a rejection letter, which was published on Facebook recently back in 1992. So
really?
even the greats have had rejection. So yeah, you're in good company.
So that inspires me, because I want to go, you know what? I did that, and that was because of the way I, my hard work and the way I sound and this and that, not because of the way I look.
Now we're going to talk about I am what I am.
Yes, exactly. My own special creation. And the third thing that inspires me, again, it's all kind of work related, I think, really. But the thing that inspires me to strive to be better in terms of my career, you know, self-employed, you have to be self-driven, you have to be self-motivated to get up in the morning and cracking on what you need to do. You've got to be motivated.
Yes.
My family constantly inspire me, and that's not a sort of cheesy cliche line, but my mum works so hard. She gets up every day, works ridiculously long hours, and I've not been brought up in a family with loads of money. You know, I've all the incredible experiences in my life, as in, you may have seen this week, I posted a picture of me flying back business class from the Caribbean. That's not because my family's got loads of money. That's because I managed to blag a free upgrade by playing the piano at the airport. You know, these things that have happened to me are because of the job and work.
Yeah,
not because
I love
I've
that.
Handed anything on a silver spoon. Now, that's not saying I've not had the most love and support from my mum and my sister growing up. We have. You know, me and my sister were so lucky in that. My family, I still live in Crewe, right? I've worked the Crewe Lyceum, my hometown theatre, last year. Besides that, I've not played locally for about 7 years. Why do I still live in Crewe? All my work's in London. Every single weekend, if I'm not on a flight somewhere, I'm driving to London. Last weekend, I did this gig with Joe Brand that finished at midnight. I got in my car and I drove home to be at my niece's 8th birthday party at 10 o'clock on Saturday morning. Because that's the most important thing to me. Yes, work is amazing. Yes, I get to go to all these incredible places and play on some of the most beautiful stages on the world. And yes, I get to go and represent the nation in Dubai and stay in 5-star hotels and fly all over the place because someone else is paying me to do that. How ridiculous is that, by the way? But the most important thing to me is I've got to be back for Jessica's birthday party. Don't care where I am, I'm getting back. So that whole thing of, you know, my family have kept me here, kept me centered at home. This is home, you know, in every aspect of that thing. It's and now I'm at home with Laura, who's been around me for forever in my life. It feels very much home now.
I remember Robbie Williams back in the day talking about loving Sheffield and the idea of there, to have your anchor point where it's really important to remember your roots and where you're from. And what?
Don't tell him you said Sheffield, though, because he's from Stoke.
Oh, awkward. Yes. I knew it began with wrong. Good correction. Yes, don't tell him. We can edit that out. We can't edit out because I don't edit. That's awesome. That's actually a mistake. So we're still in your foliage, and we could be up to, and by the way, I'm curating the conversation. We've got about 7-8 minutes to go, which is completely brilliant. And I'm really not in a hurry. Now we're going to talk about two things that never fail to grab your attention. Oh, squirrels. What might they be?
Two things. When Laura moved back from Dubai, she said, I'm not coming back unless I bring the dog. I don't want a dog. I travel all the time. I can't have a dog. And now he's my little best mate. He's so good. So Charlie, who, funnily enough, you talked about DNA before, which is quite interesting. This morning, we've just done a dog DNA test. As you do. He's a Saluki mix, but we don't know what he's mixed with. So he runs like a greyhound, whippet sort of thing, but he looks like a border collie. So he's definitely got collie in him. But if I'm focusing on work and I'm nailing down, and he's there, then I can't. Obviously, I can't.
And if I may, you play like a greyhound and you look like a border collie. Just thought I'd share that with
I'll
you.
I'll take that. Thank you. So. and when I'm, you know, when I'm upstairs playing the piano, Charlie will come and sit on my feet while I'm playing the piano. And it's funny, obviously, because I'm spending working from home a lot because I'm here. We're spending a lot of time together. So he now goes to me before Laura, which has gone down very well, as you can imagine.
Is Laura still a teacher, by the way?
Yeah, she's a music teacher. Yeah. Yeah. So she works at the local, she's at the local Catholic school. So she's constantly learning songs for mass and for prayer and all these things that she's got to do. Charlie never fails to grab my attention. And the second thing is the football results. I'm a big Liverpool fan, big Crewe Alexandra fan. I think you are allowed two teams when one of them's good and one of them's rubbish. I think that's allowed.
That is allowed.
So I can't switch off. If the football results are on, then I need to know what's going on.
By the way, it could be that if there is to be continued, if that begins to happen, if we feel that we're sort of hurrying to get me to curate the right length, and that'll be my way of getting you back into the clearing. A quirky or unusual fact about you now, Tom Seals, we couldn't possibly know until you tell us.
Struggled with this one because I don't know what is quirky. Now, the one thing I do think is quite interesting, which not many people know, is my career could have taken a very different path when at about 15 years old, I wanted to play football. I was messing around one night playing football at football training, and I put the goalkeeper gloves on and someone kicked a ball at me, put my hand out.
Oh.
Now, I appreciate this isn't great on an audio podcast, but I've now put my hand up to Chris and my little finger is not straight. It points.
Wow. And does that give you extra new dimension for the piano?
You've got it. So it doesn't bend properly. It clicks and it doesn't bend, but I can reach an extra note with my right hand, which is great news as a piano player.
What's meant for you, that's in the back of the net. What's meant for you won't pass you by.
Exactly.
What's the famous pianist where people think you can't play that because you need 7 foot wide hands? There's a particular piano.
Is it Rachmaninoff?
Thank you for helping me. Yes, yeah. Rachmaninoff. So there you are, Captain Rachmaninoff, yeah. Tom Seals. I love that.
Yeah, exactly.
So your little pinky has been knocked out of shape, but it's given you more sucker for your piano. I love that.
It does hurt a bit. I do get shooting pains up this side of my hand sometimes because of that, I think. But they offered to try and fix it. They offered to straighten it. But they said, obviously, we'd have to re-break the finger to put it back. And I said, no, let's leave it.
We've shaken your tree. And now we're going to move away from the tree. And we're going to talk about alchemy and gold. You've been giving me this by the bucket load anyway. But when you're at purpose and in flow, Tom Seals, what are you absolutely happiest doing?
I think you know the answer. On stage, with the band, having all my best friends on stage. That's the other thing. My band are just so incredible in terms of everything, from people to humour to work effort to their desire to do stuff to help me by the horn players writing out their charts because I'm not good or quick enough to do it. You know, when I'm on stage with my best mates, playing great music with an audience, happiest place in the world. Nothing else matters.
And I love the fact you've got a horn, awesome horn section in your garden. I love it. Okay, so again, that's a lovely answer. Again, forgive me if I'm going slightly rush now. So I'm going to award you with a cake now. So this is what's the favourite quote that's always given you sucker, pulled you towards your future? Could have been something that Frank said, who knows? Advice to a younger version of yourself, maybe. and or what's the best piece of advice you've been given? And then finally, yeah, inspired by Shakespeare, how, when all is said and done, Tom Seale's Boogie Woogie Wonder, would you most like to be remembered?
Well, I think both of them can be answered in one sort of quote, which Laura says a lot, which has resonated with me, which is, people will forget what you said, people will forget what you do.
Maya Angelou, please. Thank you.
But people will never forget how you made them feel. Walk into a room, learn their name, say hello, be polite, be nice. And no matter whether they like the music or not, or anything, they don't, you know, they'll go, yeah, but Tom Seale, he's a nice guy. So it's all right. Just in terms of advice to younger self, like you said, just trust in the process. You'll get there in the end. And it's all the cliche things that it doesn't matter what you look like. Just go and crack on with it. Do what you do. Be the best you can be. And you'll get there in the end. And my favourite lyric. Okay, so we quote, but favourite lyric. Billy Joel, I'd rather laugh with the sinners than cry with the saints.
Boom. Cry with the what? Boom. Just say it again, because it's
lovely. I'd rather laugh with the sinners than cry with the saints.
I'm so happy.
Love it. Love it. And it's not about being bad or being a bad person. It's just, well, let's just have a laugh and just, if you end up being a sinner because you're having a laugh and having a good time, no worries. Wonderful. Not being happy, but, you know.
Yeah. And where can we find out more about Tom Seale's? And by the way, we're about to do a Captain's Log supplemental, I think. I'll put a bit of an add-on because it comes into Buzzsprout and I can add a bit more on it.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
So where can we find out more about Tom Seale's on the hinterweb, please?
Tom Seale's everywhere. Instagram, Facebook, they're all just Tom Seale's. My website, tomseales.co.uk. We're currently touring a show called Tom Seale's Presents, which is a live show with my band where I chat to celebrity guests about their favourite songs, why they like them, what it means to them. We play it live. We've just finished a 13-week series of that concept on Sky TV. Had some amazing guests from Anton Dubeck to the Kaiser Chiefs to just so many cool people. Thank you so much for having me, Chris. I've loved it.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to the Boogie Woogie Wonder and Awesome Pants that is Mr. Tom Seale's, about to go off and represent the nation, please. Expo in Dubai. Tom Seale's, drop the mic. You've been listening to the Good Listening To show here on UK Health Radio with me, Chris Grimes. Oh, it's my son.
If you've enjoyed the show, then please do tune in next week to listen to more stories from The Clearing.
If you'd like to connect with me on LinkedIn, then please do so. There's also a dedicated Facebook group for the show too. You can contact me about the programme, or if you'd be interested in experiencing some personal impact coaching with me, care of my Level Up Your Impact programme, that's chris@secondcurve.uk. On Twitter and Instagram, it's
@thatchrisgrimes.
So until next time, for me, Chris Grimes, from UK Health Radio, and from Stan,
to your good health.
And goodbye.